There'll be things probably in this book that are on that level. But listen, I had a conversation with Ian, and he was, you know, I commend him. He was trying to do a really good job and getting the, you know, entire picture. But you have to put everything into context. I don't know what kind of book he's going to write. I do know that when I met him, one of the first things he said was, "I'm double vaxxed and double boosted."
Was he wearing a mask?
And then right. He went on a story about, you know, Kyrie Irving. You know, so listen, you know, I'm sure it'll be interesting read. I'm sure he talked to a lot of people that I know and love.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That is the voice of Bears owner Aaron Rodgers.
Part owner?
Yeah. Okay. You claim that.
Part owner.
He's talking about Ian O'Connor, who we're going to talk to in a second here. Ian did 250 exclusive interviews, including talking to Rodgers himself, and the book is out. Out of the Darkness is the book. Hilarious title, but also very fitting, given Aaron Rodgers and the various journeys he's had in his life. And Ian joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Ian, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well.
Great to talk to you. Great to catch up with you.
You're one of the great
sports writers, and this book, you've written a lot of good books, and this is a fascinating subject because Rodgers is such a seemingly complicated person. And I guess you've talked to 250 people. I know you talked to his parents and friends. What is with him and the way he cuts people off like that? You know what I'm saying? Like, he has a lot of people that have somehow misspoken, said the wrong. I don't know how you define it, but he has somehow cut off a lot of people that were very close to him in his life.
Yeah. And thanks again for having me, Mike and David. He's not the first person I've met who's like that in sports. Derek Jeter had that quality too. Now, he didn't do it to his family, but there were friends and teammates that he did the exact same thing to. And I think what it is Aaron he's got a mission, and that he always had this mission of being an all-time great. And if you were a distraction along the way or creating him some stress in his life and you weren't mission aligned, he was moving you out of the way and just taking you out of the picture entirely. And I think that's what happened with some friends and some family members. And there's one friend I talked to about that, Jordan Russell, and we called it the island that Aaron put you on, this remote island. And it was a cold and lonely and distant place. There was no cell service there, no FaceTime, even though he loves FaceTime connections to Aaron. And if you talked to somebody on the island, you were likely the next person to end up on the island. Jordan Russell was there for like 3-4 years, and he got rescued. Aaron doesn't usually bring you back, but he brought Jordan Russell back. He called him one day out of the blue and said, "I want you back in my life." And Jordan said, "Well, I command your respect to even consider this." And so I think that they're back together again as friends. But he said that basically what I just told you is that if he feels you're not, or you're a hindrance or a hurdle in any way on that path to greatness, then he will permanently, in most cases, remove you. And so then again, I have seen that in other people at times, but Aaron takes it to an extreme.
Just an impressive, exhaustive reporting project, Ian, and congratulations talking to 250 people. And I'm curious, of those people you interviewed, how many of them either tried to or already had an open mind about Aaron Rodgers? And you yourself going into this, did you have to, you know, get rid of any preconceived notions you might have had about him?
Yeah, I didn't have any agenda whatsoever. And I didn't really have, even though I was vaxxed, of course, I didn't have a whole lot of negative feelings about him when he was traded into my backyard. And that's really the reason I took the project on. I was originally scheduled, David, to do a LeBron James bio. And then another LeBron book came out by Jeff Benedict, and I was looking to pivot. And there was Aaron now suddenly in my backyard in New York. And I didn't really have a lot of negative feelings about him that I had to get rid of when I started the process. And I was open-minded, and I made sure I was. I was even making myself open-minded to some of his conspiracy theories. There are some conspiracies that are proven true later on, but most of them are not, of course. But I tried that. I was open-minded to ayahuasca and family estrangement. I come from a big Irish Catholic family that has had its share of issues. I think most American families do. This, again, is an extreme case running up now on 10 years. But I wanted to make sure I went into that discussion, like not thinking, because I think a lot of people do, that the most successful sibling is always at fault. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to be, I had zero agenda, tried to be open-minded to everything. And it was a challenging project because he's an elusive figure, as challenging, if not more so, than my Belichick book. Mm-hmm. And Belichick didn't talk to me. He also called a lot of people and told them not to talk to me. Aaron didn't do that. I appreciated that because he didn't owe me a damn thing. It's unauthorized. And at the end of the process, he agreed to sit down with me. I think a big part of the reason was he saw that I was earnest in my pursuit and trying to do it the right way. And so, yeah, that 2 hours with him in Malibu in his backyard on the Pacific Ocean was entertaining. It was insightful, and it definitely made it a better product.
I'm just curious. We heard him on WFAN there talking about you and the way you're going about writing it. Are you on the island? Have you heard from him or had a chance to see him? And do you know if he has – maybe you weren't ever in the circle, but – Is he still friendly toward you?
I don't know. And I haven't heard from him directly, nor have I heard from the Jets. He did that interview with Boomer and Geo here in New York, and it was a relatively positive take on the process. I think he was very happy that I opened the book with the story of his grandfather, which really had never been told, in finding these military documents. With the help of a gentleman in Minneapolis named Dan Matthews, who's an incredible military records expert, that documented his 44 missions against the Hitler war machine, including some very heroic acts, saving lives in his B-24, really on two occasions. I think he's like, well, if the guy's starting the book with that and telling me stories about my grandfather I didn't even know, and titling the, well, he didn't know at the time, but the chapter's titled American Hero. And I just thought I would surprise readers with a positive story about his family because there's been so much negativity around it for 10 years. So maybe that earned a level of trust between us. So, but I have not heard from him directly. I'm sure at some point I will. He did say he would read chapter one for sure. He wasn't sure about the rest of the book. So I guess he has to read it first. to have a take on it. So we'll see how it plays out.
I'm curious, for somebody who responds as much as he does respond to things that are said about him, how do you view, after all the research and sitting down with him, how he handles criticism? Do you think that it stings? Does he ignore it? Because guys in his situation have to be used to it, but has he ever gotten used to it?
Well, you guys are both longtime distinguished Chicago journalists, and you've talked to many people who tell you in sports, I don't care. I don't care what you write. I don't care what they write or say on the air. And listen, everybody cares. I mean, and he's human too. He did tell me he cares. So criticism hurts. And it hurts me when I get it. I'm human too, and it's not fun to read it and consume it and then process it. But I think that after COVID, after he made the mistake, and he admitted this mistake, which actually surprised me in August of 21, when he said those four words that changed his life forever, yeah, I've been immunized. I think he really took so much criticism 3 months later when the truth came out that he decided to dig in, that he was at a stage in his life and career at his age where I'm digging in, I'm going to defend my position, and media people who really had praised him for being socially aware, one of the more socially aware athletes in the NFL, a guy who backed Colin Kaepernick's position and did some other things that really earned him a lot of praise from the same columnists and commentators who then absolutely destroyed him after saying those four words. I think he decided, if you want a war, I'm going to give you one. And at times he was defending publicly some indefensible positions, but I have to say, I don't know how you feel about it, but on a certain level, I respected that. He's a fearless public speaker. I'm not. I think most people are not. And even though I don't agree with a number of things he has said and positions he's defended, you have to. It's really impressive that he's willing to absorb some relentless criticism, even though it hurts, to defend what he believes in. And Listen, there's been a lot of downside here in New York since he arrived. The Jets, in typical Jets fashion, have gotten none of the upside of employing Aaron Rodgers and all of the downside. At least the Packers got both. So let's hope there's less talk this year and more play. And then when he's playing and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, the rest of his off-field stuff sort of blends in. And I think if he wins in New York, a lot of it will be forgotten.
I agree with that. I think, Ian, what's fascinating to me, like, when he got on that thing with Jimmy Kimmel, and, you know, Kimmel's response to him was basically about him being a junior college guy, not a Cal guy, and he played at Cal for 2 years. I think all that stuff is fascinating, the idea that as a high school player, he didn't get the scholarships. I think he was offered a walk-on chance at the U of I right here, down the road from Chicago,
Ron
a couple
Turner.
Hours away,
yeah.
Exactly. But he declined that. He went to junior college. He winds up at Cal. He's coached by Jeff Tedford, and maybe that ended up being one of the reasons, you know, Tedford had this reputation. Everybody had the ball at their ear. Everybody released it the same way. He developed these quarterbacks that wound up busting in the NFL. Maybe that's the reason. Instead of going first, he drops all the way down in the draft to Green Bay, and then he's behind, Brett Favre. How did all of that, like that kind of backstory, how did you handle that, and how did that the group of people from that era, are they all still in touch with him, or is everybody cut off?
No, a number of them are still in touch with him. In fact, the guy who saved his career is really Craig Rigsby, the longtime coach at Butte Community College. He lived like five or six houses away. I was over his house, and we walked over or went over to where Aaron lived. And Aaron's entire recruiting experience in high school, even though he was a great high school quarterback in Chico, and he had 1310 on his SATs, was Craig Rigsby taking a three-minute walk over to his house, knocking on the door, and convincing his mother that she should send him to junior college, even though he had 1310 in his SATs and he was a great athlete. So that was a tough sell, but he was Craig Rigsby is a figure in his life that Aaron can't control. He's a Charles Barkley-esque figure, great storyteller, and he's not afraid of Aaron at all. He's like the one guy in this process who just, he'll tell a story and he doesn't care about the consequences. And Aaron knows that, and he can't control this guy. But this guy saved his life, his football life. He gave him a platform for Division I coaches to see him, and obviously Tedford at Cal saw him on film and then came to practice and was like, and he was actually first interested in the tight end. That's how he was introduced to Rodgers by accident almost. Garrett Cross was his name, the tight end at Butte. He wanted him, and then he fell into Aaron's lap, and the rest is history. But to this day, I think Aaron has that gigantic chip or boulder on his shoulder from his high school days, no scholarships. He almost gave up football. He was so distraught over that. The JUCO experience, which was a great experience for him, but he had to go there. And that, then the drop. I mean, in the draft, his dream team growing up was the 49ers. He wanted to be the next Joe Montana and Steve Young. He was supposed to go number one. And then that day in 2005, he became the first NFL draft reality show, his humiliation. And that was the first day YouTube was born. The first day that a video was uploaded on YouTube was the same day of that reality show, Aaron's humiliation. So it's fitting, I guess. But yeah, that is still with him absolutely every day. And we'll see if it plays out this season with the Jets in a positive way.
Talking with Ian O'Connor, the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, here in Mullen Haw. So it seems as if there might be a softening with his family, the estrangement of over a decade. At a Lake Tahoe event, he had shared a hug with his father, Ed. Do you think that's an indication of things to come, Ian, or was that just a coincidental? How would you describe that and what it means?
Well, Ed put himself in position, and the estrangement is very complicated. There are like 15 reasons for it. Everybody thought there was one reason. There isn't. But anyway.
I thought it was Olivia Munn. Didn't he have a fallout?
Yeah. The parents think it's Olivia Munn and some other family members and friends now, but he hasn't dated her in 7 years, so it can't all be her fault, right? And so, yes. I mean, so Ed decides to put himself in the Lake Tahoe celebrity golf tournament crowd and hoping that Aaron would see him. Aaron did see him on the ninth hole on Saturday in that round, and was debating whether or not to go over and make this the day that I finally say hello to my father. And he thought about ignoring him and acting like he didn't see him, but something compelled him to go over there. Ed had actually lost sight of him, and I think was looking back at the ninth tee box, turns around, and there's his son 15 feet away looking at him. And Ed said, I froze because I forgot what that felt like, my son being in my presence. It's been 9 years, and now he's looking at me from close range. So Aaron goes over, gives him a hug. They both say, I love you. Ed starts crying, and Aaron gathers himself and goes back and finishes his round. And there's surprisingly no follow-up, but they both did say for the book on the record that they want a relationship. Aaron said, I want a relationship with my dad for sure. And his dad was his hero. Growing up, yeah, it was Montana and Young, but he said in college at Cal, my father's my hero. I want to be him. So I think the road to reconciliation here runs through Ed Rogers. I don't know why more hasn't happened since. And I think Aaron's just trying to figure out a way to kill off this estrangement. It's a living organism, and he can't quite figure it out. But I think at some point it will happen, and then hopefully the rest of the family will come together.
It's amazing to me. I mean, I miss my parents all the time, and I'm hoping my kids stay in touch with me. Jesus. Ian, when we look at his life and you get into the ayahuasca stuff, which I don't really understand. I have a friend who's kind of real into that kind of stuff and claims that it has changed his life. What can you tell us about that and how devoted is he to it?
Oh, he's very devoted to it. And Jordan Russell, the friend I mentioned, he went to Peru in 2019 and sat for some ayahuasca ceremonies, consumed the brew, and thought it was great. And he went to Aaron back in California and said, you got to try this. So Aaron goes to Peru with Danica Patrick, his girlfriend at the time. He sits for a number of ayahuasca ceremonies, and he comes away thinking this was an amazing experience, and he's done it a number of times since. He said it made him a better person and player and friend. And the way it was described to me, because, of course, I've never consumed it, is it's like a lucid dream with embedded messages about yourself and loved ones. And Aaron said it improved, like, everything about his life, including relationships. I don't know why it didn't help the relationship with his family, and maybe that's to come. But I just had a friend of his who played with him at Cal, lives here in New Jersey, Steve Levy, tell me that Aaron's definitely a better person since he started using ayahuasca. So, and I know he's been mocked for that. And frankly, that's one of the things, like, I tried to be really open-minded about. I haven't mocked him for it because, well, it works for him. If it made him a better person, okay, I'm all for it.
Right.
So it's not something I think I would ever do. But, yeah, his friends do believe it's helped him. And he plans on continuing to do it throughout the rest of his career, however long that lasts, 2-3 more years. And I think after that as well.
So in the final analysis, Ian, is Aaron Rodgers' legacy more polarizing figure or prolific top 10 quarterback?
I think, ask me that question after his Jets career is over, because if he ever somehow wins a championship for a franchise that has not been to the Super Bowl since January of 1969, that could change a whole lot of things about his legacy. I actually think I have him 5 on my unofficial all-time list right now. Some people have him lower than that. But if he does win a ring in New York, that is going to make a lot of off-field perceived sins go away. That's just the way it is in sports. So let's see if he can pull it off.
Great stuff. Ian, I got to tell you, I do have a copy of the book, and I've gone through it a little bit, but now I just want to sit down and read it. I don't know how I'm going to finish this show. That is really
tremendous job.
Interesting stuff. Thank you, buddy. Great catching up with you.
Thanks.
You guys are great journalists. It was a pleasure to be on and an honor. Thank you.